ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank on Branham. It's Joe George, the assistant to the regional manager behind the glass, and it is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Missed you guys yesterday as I was serving my one-game suspension on the beach. I felt terrible for what I did, but I've apologized. I aim to do better. I strive to do better as a radio talk show host, and I just want to apologize to absolutely nobody. How are you guys doing today?
Who the hell did you apologize to? Because
said absolutely nobody.
I know, but at first when you said I apologized, I'm like, well, that better not have happened to the show after us, because there was no one deserved to have an apology there. So you did drive around in a convertible, though. I saw you high rolling. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, I went to Tops Down Weekend is this week in Galveston. I'm just getting a head start in Florida. I got upgraded. They didn't have what I ordered on my rental car thing, and they were like, hey, you want a convertible? I was like, okay,
sure, why not?
That's a good car to have on the beach with beautiful weather. I'll do that as I serve my one-day suspension.
Yeah.
So it was good. It was good. How'd the show go yesterday?
Did you guys
kill each other? Or?
No, we had fun. I thought we had a really good show and good dialogue, and we're ready to go again today.
Yeah, we're both happy that I'm back. Yeah. The Astros lost baseball yesterday.
Yeah.
This is like so Astros. You know what I mean? Like they rough up Corbin Burns because the Astros know how to flip a switch. They rough up good pitching, a former Cy Young winner, and then some dude yesterday that no one's ever heard of shuts them down. A combined 5-hitter for the Houston Astros yesterday. Like, I don't care. Like, this is what the Houston Astros do. They crush the ace, they lose to the jabroni, and they go for the rubber game a little bit later today.
Yeah, look, I mean, I was hoping that the streak might motivate them, because you're absolutely right. I mean, this team has a real, real tendency to get pumped up for big series against big teams or big matchups against big pitchers, and then just really have a whole lot of I don't care against bad teams and bad players. And last night was one of those deals. I mean, I really didn't have the feeling that it was going to be sour until the whole debacle at second base, where a guy stealing a base and then trying to pick him off ends up letting him score from second base because of the throw, and then the Chaz playing deeply. I'm like, oh, this one's probably not going to go well. And then, of course, it didn't. And Bagwell was like a librarian in the ninth inning when he just didn't want to say anything about Montero, but it's like he kept saying at the start, we just got to keep it close. Just shut the door right here. Just keep it to two and then get our bats in. And then it was just when the hit started coming, I was like, oh, boy. That's not going to happen either.
Yeah, not one to write home about. You brought up Yiner Diaz. I thought he got exposed a little bit as a catcher yesterday, because we've been having this internal dialogue, right, about, well, the Houston Astros catcher situation. And really, it's only a dialogue in the fan base. Like, the Astros, they're committed to what they believe. They're committed to Martin Maldonado being the – even, like – We say 4 out of every 5 days. He's catching more than that a lot of times, depending on the days off. Like, he is the primary catcher for this team by far. Yiner Diaz is a distant number two catcher on this team and goes weeks at times without catching. And so the fan base, you know, they want Yiner Diaz's bat in the lineup, even though Martin Maldonado is having a really good May. They want Yiner Diaz to play more because, you know, the young guys are always a little bit more entertaining than what you know you have in a Martin Maldonado, who's not a very good offensive player. You know, the defense is starting to, I guess, trend down a little bit, but he's still really good at, like, calling a game, seeing a pitching staff through. So this dialogue has gone on with the fan base, not really with the Astros. The Astros know what they're doing. They have a plan. They're committed to it. I thought yesterday was the first time from, like, our amateur eyes watching the Astros that Yiner Diaz was exposed defensively. You mentioned the one where he tried the back pick at second base.
Yep.
Like, a little bit unlucky. Like, it was not a good decision. It was a bad decision. Like, there, even if there was a player there, you're not getting the guy out. It was a poor decision. Now, it was a little bit of an unlucky break for him to be able to score from second with the way the ball trickled into the outfield. But also, he had a terrible pass ball. Like, I bet you it was ruled a wild pitch, but he had that ball in the dirt where he tried to literally scoop it. Like, he didn't flip the glove over. Didn't work around it at all. I thought Yiner Diaz had his worst defensive game as an Astro yesterday.
Yeah, look, I mean, and we always say, you know, teams, guys, they're going to have days like this. But it's unfortunate because you're right. The one thing that I would say on top of everything that you said about Diaz is the fact that people were stoked up about him just because he was a, he's an offensive catcher. I mean, you think about that kind of position, and it's almost a rarity when you get the really good offensive catchers. And I was talking about it with some of the guys in the gym this morning about from Johnny Bench to Mike Piazza, and then where would you go after that in terms of, you know, really productive offensive catchers. It's a rarity. When you have one, you keep them, and you know, you do things with them. And for the long haul, you wrap them up because of that, as well as they play defense. We know that Maldi's defense only, although he's been hot lately. But I think part of the excitement that the fan base has is, hey, here's a kid who, the minute that they saw that, you know, his pop time and they saw his cannon, they're like, oh, well, that's Maldi-ish. Well, now we've got defense and offense. Now he's got to be in the lineup, and that's what got him really fired up. But we knew that there was a reason why there was concerns and why he was in the bullpen all of the playoffs and last year just catching bullpens from all these pitchers because he hadn't caught enough. And you're seeing some of that like last night. I think that the experience of having caught games that game after game and league after league, major leagues and otherwise, Maldi just hasn't had a situation that he hasn't been through before. And I think that Diaz was probably feeling himself a little bit going, you know what? I'm feeling really good. People are talking about my arm. Let me show you some things here. You're not playing the A's anymore. You're not playing the single A's, as you called them. You're playing a first-place team. And when you screw around and do things like that, you can get exposed, and that kind of started a downward trend yesterday. But you're right. Maybe he did get exposed a little bit in the fact that he's very inexperienced back there.
Yeah. I mean, flip the glove. Like, that was a pretty – like, there's no excuse for that. Like, it was pretty lazy. Like, it's some of the things that we talk about with Martin Maldonado. But Maldonado's kind of earned the stripes. Yiner Diaz has not. That said, I'm still bullish on Diaz. Like you said, one game. Like, I'm not going to overreact to the one game other than Yiner Diaz showed us a little bit what the Astros think of him behind the scenes as a defensive catcher. On the other hand, I thought J.P. France was really good. Yeah. Like, you needed to have a rebound start after getting lit up at home. I mean, lit up more than we've seen J.P. France get lit up. And he pitched really well. You know, 5 2/3, gave up 2 runs. One of them was because of Yiner Diaz. Only one of them was earned and struck out 8. Like, he showed us again. And I this was an important start for me, from my point of view, watching J.P. France at the big league level. Because, you know, anybody that gets called up to the big leagues can have a solid start or two. Like, everybody's capable of doing that, that gets called up and has an opportunity to do so. But then how does he respond after getting lit up in a game, after getting touched, after starting to doubt his existence a little bit as a pitcher in Major League Baseball? So I'm always curious with these bounce back games. Like, you have to prove yourself a little bit. And I thought he was great. It makes me encouraged with J.P. France starting some more games in this rotation until you get healthy again.
Yeah, look, I thought it was a big test for him. I thought that as good as he was in his first two starts, and he really should have and deserved to get a win in his first one, there was a couple things I was looking for. Again, you know, as he was getting more stretched out, is he going deeper into games? And I think he could have finished the sixth when he pitched. But, you know, but I think that when you look at what he's doing and the fact that no matter how anemic for a game the offense was, he kept you in the ballgame. You know, he was an out away from giving you a quality start. And as you get lower in the rotation and have to deal with the injuries they've dealt with, he's given you 3 out of 4 where you have no reason not to believe this is a guy that can help get me through whether McCullers and or Keady come back or not. And that's encouraging because you didn't know what you had, and I don't think a whole lot of eyes were on him at the start of the year as a guy that could possibly be a guy that was going to see major league time and be someone that plays a role on this team. And now because of injuries, he's been thrust into that role, and I think he's fully capable now, and I believe that he will get stretched out even more. But even if he gets close to or gives you 6 and does what he did 3 of the 4 times, that's great. I mean, I could not be more pleased with what he's done so far.
Yeah, I would take 5-6 decent quality innings every single start from J.P. France. Like, you're not asking him to be a top half of the rotation pitcher. FedEx Mike says topless weekend already passed, Branham. Shows you what I know. I'm a
last weekend was Jeep weekend. They said they still had a ton of arrests.
Yeah, that's called topless weekend because they let down their tops. But I'm just doing it a week later, I guess, in the Sunshine State.
I didn't know that was the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
On the news, they just kept – they limited it to just Jeeps, but it makes sense.
Yeah, family show. Lone Star Tony, Bagwell messed up all – he said GM Bagwell messed up all 3 of his moves and is cringeworthy to listen to him justify or come up completely silent along with the oohs and ahs and terrible moments. Laughable. How are you liking the Jeff Bagwell color commentator experience?
Joe and I were going to talk about yesterday and we didn't. I really enjoy – I don't know that I could enjoy it for a full year because the we's and the us's and stuff kind of get to me sometimes. But I do enjoy the stories, and I enjoy his insight from a player, ex-player perspective, from the stories of when he played to, like, the thinking of what he, as a hitter, would expect if a pitcher goes high and tight on the first, on one of the pitches, where he thinks the next pitch is going to be. And most times he's right. I think that his knowledge and in-depth knowledge of the game, it makes it very, very interesting. But I can also understand how people can get rubbed the wrong way with some of the ways that he's not a broadcaster. He didn't go to school for it. He didn't study it. He doesn't follow it enough. He listens to the guys do the games. But he's not going to give you traditional, you know, broadcast speak, where he's not going to do the kind of things that I mentioned with the we's and us's and some of those other things. But I enjoy him. I really do. I like when he – it's just – this is a different animal because everybody wants to hear him talk about three players. Everybody right. wants to hear him talk about his missteps. Todd Callis, to his credit, hasn't run away from it.
Yeah.
But what Bagwell gives you is basically coach speak because he gave it to you 2 days in a row when as it relates to Abreu.
I'm a big fan of Jeff Bagwell being the backup color commentator.
Yeah.
You're right. It's a very interesting dynamic because it's kind of like you want to hear from temporary GM Jeff Bagwell as he's being the backup color commentator. I find it enjoyable. playing Scarface on
that
his phone. Like, how does that happen?
Now, was that Scarface calling him? Because he mentioned him, and he goes, I thought
I
it was
think,
just...
No, I don't think so.
Well, because
he
gave
just,
his
like,
real name.
Play somehow. Yeah, but I don't think he called them. Like, I think that Scarface would have had, like, the presence of mind to know that he was on the broadcast and to not call him during the game. And it went on for too long, I think, for it to be a ringtone. Like,
okay.
That was going on for a decent amount of time. So I don't think so.
Okay.
I really don't think so. I love the fact that he forgot that he was on a charter flight when he was a hitting coach. Like, Jeff Bagwell has completely forgotten the period
yeah,
what'd he of
time. Yeah, what did he say? It's been 18 years?
He was a hitting coach? Yeah. He said, I haven't been on a charter flight since my playing days. Dude, you were literally the batting coach for this team for a period of time.
For the final months of the season, yeah.
And the traveling secretary, like, had to correct him. Like, that was hilarious. Bagwell, like, also, he talks about specific things, and, like, he doesn't realize that he's pro-analytics without realizing he's pro-analytics.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, he was talking about the minor league ballpark where you can't take, you can't take a home run the opposite field there because they have a short right field seriously. Well, you know what measures that? Analytics, Jeff. he has an analytical mind. I just don't think he can comprehend the two. But you're right. Like, the explanation of Abreu's slump, like, not that he's necessarily wrong, but I think it's a little bit kind of delusional, maybe, like telling people to look at the back of his baseball card. Dude, I don't care what Jose Abreu's done in the last 10 years. I care what Jose Abreu's going to do in 2023 when he's in his late 30s and is off to the worst start he's had in his professional career. I don't care about the back of his baseball card.
Yeah, look, I mean, we talk about this all the time, and I bring it up when you and I are talking about a lot of these different failures that there's no GM in any sport that isn't going to be hyper defensive, sensitive, and have a massive ego when it comes to players that they brought in or drafted and giving them every opportunity to succeed. And until that they have that final call on whether they're going to stick around or they're going to be shipped out, you know that they're going to fight tooth and nail for that player to make themselves look right. And I think that Baggy's no different. I mean, Baggy's going to tell you, yeah, he's going to figure it out. Yeah, he's doing this, and he's leaning too far that, and he, you know, he's capable of this, and look at the back of his card there. Factor in age, Jeff. Factor in that, just like you, but yours was a shoulder-driven at first, but every guy falls off at a certain point. Some fall harder and quicker than others, and some fall at a different age than others. But it's really easy to point fingers right now, and no matter how defensive you get, it's really easy for fans to not have the same kind of optimism that you have because you made this deal in thinking this one may not work out.
Yep. Busy show today. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. On Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. I have a plan for Lance McCullers Jr., the short-term and long-term plan with this often injured Astros starter. Soft. Are we open to the idea of not only James Harden but a Patrick Beverley reunion? Weird take Wednesday as well. But coming up next, the fear-mongering I'm seeing of Davis Mills being QB1 is in full force. We're not buying this, right? We're not falling for this. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yeah, I mean, I'm competing for that starting job. I mean, since I've been drafted in the NFL, I've been in competition. I don't think anything's going to change, but, I mean, it's been great getting to know CJ so far. He's an extremely hard worker. And it'll be good to see how we go out there and compete every day and make each other better.
There you go. Davis Mills fighting for the job of QB1 for the Houston Texans. I've seen some people fear-mongering this, Blankers, of like, oh, prepare for Davis Mills competing for the job. Prepare for Davis Mills potentially starting week one for the Houston Texans, a la Tom Savage and Deshaun Watson way back in the day. Like, we're not falling for this, right? Like, we're not going to fall for this little OTA speech in May where Davis Mills is like, yeah, I could be the starter. And C.J. Stroud's like, I don't care if I'm QB2. I'm just trying to get better. If I'm QB1 someday, that's going to be great. D'Amico Ryan saying, oh, we battle for the job. Like, we're not falling for this, right? Like, C.J. Stroud is the starter. Anybody fear-mongering Davis Mills as QB1, I think is flat-out silly.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a big difference between in your mind what you think you're going to do and what you want to do and how you think it's going to go, and then the organization. And I don't think that in this case that they're on the same page. And I'd be curious how much longer that kind of talk goes before someone has a talk with them or just basically lets them know, hey, look, you know, our plan right now is CJ is going to be the starter or whatever they're going to do. But I don't think it's going to be where part of the plan involves Davis Mills competing for the starting job. I love the fact that he has that mindset. I love the fact that it seems like he's being a good teammate early on with CJ and getting to know him and you know, and going to compete with him. But I don't think that anybody that's following this team on a consistent basis and knows football thinks the way that Davis Mills is thinking. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's like it's OTA speak. It's like Bryce Young was not taking full number one snaps at Carolina OTA. Like, he was sharing time with the Red Rocket. Like, that's not – Andy Dalton's not going to be the starting quarterback for Carolina. Davis Mills is not going to be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans. And I think people like having that dialogue, having that conversation. Like, I don't really – I don't know the motive, to be quite honest with you. Like – go ahead. Like, I don't get what the motive is when people are saying that and putting that into existence.
Here's what I would say, because we heard Case Keenum say something similar on the bench where he was indicating that, look, in his mind, he's competing. And he didn't come out and think – I mean, he didn't come right out and say that he is, you know, trying to be the starting quarterback. But I think he wanted to make it clear that it's a competition or that he's going to compete – he's going to practice every day like it's a competition. I think it may be, Jeremy, to answer your question, it may be something that from the front office's perspective, like when they brought Case in, for sure, I'm not sure they had this conversation with Davis, but when you bring Case in and you say, hey, look, I don't want this kid to think when we draft him, if we draft a quarterback, but whenever the conversation happened, look, say they already talked, we're going to probably draft a quarterback. I want you to come in and act like and talk like you're competing for this job. I want this kid to believe he's not being given the starting job day one. I want this kid to understand like nothing's going to be handed to him like it might have been at Ohio State. I think that organizations have those conversations sometimes because they know damn well that there's – like Joe and I talked about this yesterday. The fact that Davis Mills came in and basically from day one last year, he knew he was going to be the starter. He's probably going to be the starter all season long. Kind of because of that, at a certain point, he felt like he was just going to point fingers and it's not my fault and it's everybody else and it's the receivers this and you know all these – the offensive coordinator that – I think when you come in a competition and you realize that, hey, the organization isn't going to feed you with a silver spoon, a lot of times general managers and football people think, hey, that toughens a kid up. That gets him seasoned a little bit quicker and realizes, hey, you can't coast here. You gotta grind every day.
Yeah, I guess I mean it more from like the outside looking in, because I get it from a team perspective, like especially day one OTA, like day one of offseason training activity that's voluntary, by the way. Like, I totally understand the Texans saying, you know, look, Davis Mills, you're going to get some snaps with the ones. You know, C.J. Stroud, you're going to get some snaps with the one. Case Keenum, QB number three, which whatever. Like, his job isn't to play football. His job is to groom and help develop and be this, you know, the veteran presence around a quarterback that you just took number two in the draft. If you want to reach and go as far to say he's also going to be a veteran presence for a third-round quarterback that you drafted 2 years ago that has started a lot of games in 2 years and really hasn't shown you that he is, like, worth being an NFL starting quarterback, okay, fine, whatever. But even if like Davis Mills starts a game, like this dialogue going on, well, that Davis Mills can win this job. Dude, you drafted C.J. Stroud number two. You know what you've had in Davis Mills. There is nobody on this earth that thinks that this is a Davis Mills football team. So like the fear-mongering of, oh, Davis Mills could beat C.J. Yeah. Stroud for this job, dude, whatever. Like, okay, he could beat Tom Savage and C.J. Stroud's Deshaun Watson. He can start for the first half of one game of a 17-game season. This is C.J. Stroud's football team, period, end of story.
Yeah, look, I mean, from an external perspective, I can never answer for some of the people that drink blue Kool-Aid morning, noon, and night and are just looking for something to try and dissect, pick apart, and worry about. But I'm not worried about Davis Mills unless the only thing I'm worried about is him being a distraction, about him continuing with this kind of talk and then kind of selling people out along the way to say that he's practiced better or played better or deserves more time. But you're right. I mean, internally, I think there's an understanding, but I think that they want him to work. I think the same way, the same reason why you heard Caserio's comments after he was drafted. He was gushing and glowing about Anderson. But on the flip side, he basically was kind of like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. And he wasn't nearly the same complimentary GM when it came to talking about his quarterback, kind of already setting the tone that you're going to have to bust your ass a little bit here to earn it. But we all know, you know, in our heart of hearts and minds, that CJ's going to start week one.
The Jerry Gambler said, let Mills play week one so his minions can shut up already. It's a hard game to win anyways. Junior Broncos, no, I'm never going to do that about Davis Mills, blah, 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 blah. Like, this is C.J. Stroud's football team. Like, seeing the conversation going on that Davis Mills could be the starter for the Houston Texans, I think is ridiculous. Like, it's OTA one. Davis Mills getting first-team snaps, whatever. I am kind of curious, though, like, who gives you a better chance to win a football game in week one? Davis Mills or C.J. Stroud playing his first-ever game?
See, here's the thing, Jeremy. I was thinking about this when you were talking about it just a little while back. If this was the same offense with the same coaching staff, there might be an argument to say that Davis Mills would be the guy that could get you through the short term or get you through that game. And yes, he has more NFL experience, and he's learned some things from last year, so he probably gives you a better chance to win as it stands right now. We don't know what we don't know about C.J. Stroud. Is he going to come in? Is he going to grasp everything? Is he going to understand it? We know he's going to take some lumps when he sees different defenses and different blitz packages and things like that. But I think because you don't have the same offense and the same system and the same terminology and the same coaching staff, I think they're as close to even ground as they can be, with the exception of the experience of Mills. So I guess for those that are Mills honks, they can say he gives you a better chance to win week one. But we don't know that yet, because C.J. Stroud might be able to pick up everything quickly and run a similar system that he's familiar with, to be able to do things that this team needs to do, and you need him to get the same kind of experience for the long haul. So my days with Davis Mills and any kind of conversations about him, you and I were honest with him from the start, but yeah. I'm done with that.
To me, it's almost like the Yordan conversation. Like, whenever you build a lineup, you put Yordan in first, and then you build the lineup around Yordan Alvarez to optimize the brilliance of Yordan Alvarez. To me, whenever you draft a quarterback at number two that's obviously going to be, like, the guy you're committed to at that position for a period of time, you do everything that is in the best interest of that guy. If it means that you sacrifice Davis Mills, like Tom Savage, for a half of football, that's what you do. Like, you're not looking at the best interest of
right.
Davis Mills. You're looking at the best interest of the number two pick of the NFL draft.
We're kind of taking that point to the next level, too. Aside from that, what you're also doing, you're not maybe doing it as much as Greg Roman did and the Ravens did for Lamar Jackson, but you're now constructing your offense around your quarterback and your skill position players so that you get the most out of them. So the same offense that Davis Mills ran a year ago, that when everybody knew Davis Mills was going to be the quarterback, it's going to be totally different than the offense that they're going to structure and start to run for C.J. Stroud. Now, Davis Mills will be able to pick it up, but he may be able to do some things, but he's not going to have the same kind of offense tailored to whatever his strengths were that they saw that they wanted to try and capitalize on. This is going to be an offense tailored around C.J. Stroud.
no doubt. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We know that Stroud is their guy. C.J. Stroud is the Texans guy. When he's starting a football game, is probably more in the best interest of when C.J. Stroud is ready than anything that Davis Mills is doing. One conclusion I've seen people jump to is that C.J. Stroud is a franchise quarterback. I think that's a silly statement to make before he's ever taken a snap in the NFL, and C.J. Stroud even admitted to it. He said that he hopes to be a franchise quarterback. What is it going to take for C.J. Stroud to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One of the very best things that you can do this summer is to get your kids out in the driveway playing some basketball. You don't want them to be inside all day playing video games. Get them outside. Give them some fun to do. Let them be active. Let them exercise. All of that stuff. Well, if that is the plan, that is the goal, give them a goal from Pro Dunk. It is the best basketball goals that you'll find. I've been telling you for the last couple of weeks, I've been walking Brandon Baby around the neighborhood, and I see cheap goal, backboard broken, rims jacked up. Some of them are laying down in their driveways. Get a goal from Pro Dunk if you're buying a basketball goal. Do yourself a favor. Get yourself a goal from Pro Dunk. They have the highest quality basketball goals that you'll find. The breakaway rim, more on that later. Tempered glass backboard, which gives you a true, authentic feel with a layup. Whenever you miss a shot, it feels like the goals the pros use. Their accessories are next level as well. We already mentioned the LED light kits. Well, I guess we didn't mention that, but LED light kits. It gets hot in the summer. You might only want to play at night, right? Well, I understand that. It's hot during the day. Well, get these LED light kits so you can play at night. Backstop nets. Don't chase the basketball everywhere. You got the backstop nets. That'll do that work for you. Pull pad lettering and lots, lots more. We mentioned the breakaway rim. Why? Because it's height adjustable. You can lower it down all the way to 5 feet. Maybe you have a little one working on their game. Maybe you have a little toddler running around that wants to shoot hoops. Maybe you just want to throw down some dunks, and you can't dunk anything higher than 5 feet. And you can raise it all the way to 10 feet, too, so anywhere in between. You can order everything online, including professional installation. Yes, you don't have to do it. You can't screw it up. It's idiot-proof. Why? Because the pros at Pro Dunk will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at Pro Dunk do all of the work for you. Give them a call right now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
C.J. Stroud talked to the media yesterday. Whoa! C.J. Stroud talking to the media yesterday. This was a big deal at rookie minicamp, at least to John McClain, and then he asked him about... Who did he ask him about? Travis Scott and Tom Brady.
Yep.
Like, John McClain was so upset and butthurt that C.J. Stroud didn't talk at rookie minicamp, and then he's asking him about Travis Scott. Like, oh, my goodness. It was hilarious.
Is he employed by anybody anymore to cover the team?
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
Very technically, semantically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, he does I know he does some pieces on the Highway to Hell. He does some hits, and I think he posts some articles there too.
Kind of grandfathered
articles there now because of the
collapse.
Furniture's gone. Mm-hmm. Which is too bad. A lot of good people over there. 713-780-ESPN. What is it going to take for C.J. Stroud to be a franchise quarterback? I've seen people jumping to the conclusion that C.J. Stroud already is a franchise quarterback, which, I can understand it, because whenever you draft a quarterback number two, you're certainly committed to making him a franchise quarterback. You're hoping that he becomes a franchise quarterback. You've spent a lot of draft capital on a quarterback. You would hope that he becomes that franchise QB. I don't think that's something that is earned, Blankers, though, when you're drafted. I think you have to go out and produce and show that you are a franchise quarterback.
Isn't it kind of semantics, right? It's one versus the other. It's like you can be anointed the job in principle.
I think it's a relative term.
Yeah. I mean, if you're drafted in a certain spot in the draft, the idea is you're going to be the starting quarterback. So on paper, you're the starting quarterback. But if you play like dog snot, you're not going to be the starting quarterback for long. And obviously, it goes back to the conversation about any GM that drafted you is going to give you every opportunity to continue to be put out there to try and prove him right, that the Sam Darnolds and the Baker Mayfields of the world, they're going to get every 16 more opportunities than they deserve, because guys want to prove that they should have been taken where they were taken, and they're going to keep throwing you out there. But, yeah, you got to earn it. And I think that in C.J. Stroud's case, we know based on where he was taken, whether you want to believe he was part of the reason why the trade was made or not, you know that they got a guy that high in the draft. He damn well better be considered your franchise quarterback for the next 5 to 7 years. So he's now got to go out and he's got to earn that. And maybe it doesn't happen short term. And we know that the track record says rookie quarterbacks don't excel and don't, you know, blow everybody away. But over time, we better see progress, and we better see progress quickly so that in the next year or so, we understand this dude gets it. He's going to be the guy. He looks good.
Here was Stroud yesterday at OTA day one. I guess it was day two, but first day that they were talking to the media, which big deal, huge news over at NRG, CJ Stroud talking to the media. We were talking about this a little bit last segment, too, about, you know, he's taking some reps with number two. CJ Stroud says he doesn't care.
For me, I'm just trying to get better. It's not about being with the ones, it's not about being with the twos, it's about getting better. This is what the spring is for, just learning the plays, getting the timing down, learning my receivers, learning Woods, learning Tank, learning how Nico runs his route, learning how Johnny runs his routes, how Dalton, just anybody I can learn from, and that's what I've been on. It's not about ones and twos right now, it's about just getting better as a whole, so we're getting ready for training camp. So that's been a blessing.
Really enlightening stuff from C.J. Stroud yesterday, really a good, brilliant mind.
I like it, though. I mean, I like the fact that, you know, this coming on the heels of Roethlisberger, who said, I didn't want, you know, the Kenny Pickett to succeed. And all the guys we've seen that as a veteran, when you have a young quarterback come in, you don't want anything to do with them. And your ego takes a hit and you don't like it. And from this flip side, you get a lot of rookies that come in at quarterback because of all the pomp and circumstances. They're cocky. They believe that they deserve to be there. They already are going to be a stud and they're going to succeed no matter what. And the comments that I've heard from him in listening to the majority of the comments he made, I like the fact that he's humble. I like the fact that he's not afraid to learn, that he's understanding that, you know, he's trying to get his feet wet and get kind of reps underneath him. And I like what I hear from him so far.
Here's the question that I want to ask. As far as hearing from C.J. Stroud, I don't know if I don't really care what's said at a press conference, if I'm being completely honest with you. Like, we sit there and critique, like,
but you know what I'm saying, right?
You know, I do, but like,
I don't want a guy that comes in and goes, yeah, whatever. I mean, this is just, you know, a mini camp. You know, and not that, like, some Cam Newton when he used to really get cocky. Rodgers has been known to do it too. Where,
yeah, but I mean, if he turns out to be Cam and Rodgers, cool. Like, that's why I'm trying. Like, but I'm saying, even from the Vegas, I don't care about what they're saying on the podium.
But when they were first drafted, I'm sure their first press conferences, there's plenty of guys that had a little extra confidence in everything that they said, like almost like flippantly, like this is gonna be easy.
Yeah, listening to the 12 minutes of C.J. Stroud, I don't know if I was, like, overly impressed with C.J. Stroud. But the question, and like, again, I don't really care. Like, DeMeco Ryans is impressive to me because he doesn't give you, like, the fluff. He doesn't give you, like, he'll give you coach speak, like the Jadeveon Clowney answer. Oh, we're not going to close the book on anybody. He'll give you coach speak, but he doesn't waste everybody's time, like, you know, talking, you know, out of both sides or, like, filibustering. He's to the point. He's direct. That's what I want as a head coach. It doesn't make him a good head coach. It doesn't make him a bad head coach. It just means he handles himself at a press conference decently. The question that I want to ask, though, is like, what does C.J. Stroud have to do to be a franchise quarterback in this league? Because you're right, it is a relative term. Whenever you draft a quarterback two, you are handing the keys to that quarterback to hopefully be that franchise QB. But I think it has to be earned. 9656 on the HRMP listener line says, make it to two conference championships within 7 years of being in the league. I think that's way too brash. Like, two conference championships within 7 years in the league, we won't be talking about C.J. Stroud as a franchise quarterback. We'll be talking about him as a guy that can win a Super Bowl for the first time in the city of Houston. I think that's too lofty. I think for him to be, like, crowned a franchise quarterback in the NFL, in this league, I think we got to look at him as having the potential, not even to, like, be there already. I think we have to look at him, like, after a year, maybe after 2 years, where we look at C.J. Stroud and say, this guy could be a top 10 quarterback. We believe this guy has a shot to one day lead us to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that what I said about Davis Mills starts the conversation, as it relates to his first year. Just show you can move the team. You can score points. You're starting to pick up the offense. You know, you have flashes where we see a throw. We see throws or decisions where you go, okay, that's why we drafted you where we drafted you. And then as it progresses, you know, you start taking this team on a lead, on your shoulders in a leadership role and taking them towards a division title, making progress in the win column, showing everybody that you're not making dumb mistakes, turning the ball over. And again, I go back to what we said this a year ago when we were trying to set the table for Davis Mills, but on a grander scale, you're not the reason why the game was lost, and you made enough plays to where they had a chance to win. Those are the kind of things in the first year or two you really want to see out of C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, to me, to be that franchise quarterback, I mean, it is a very relative term, and I think everybody's going to have their different points. I think you're right. Like, I think a lot of people, well, he was drafted at 2. He is the franchise quarterback. 713-780-ESPN, what do you think it's going to take for C.J. Stroud to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL? Certainly, he's the guy for the future for the Texans, but if we're looking at it from an NFL landscape, what does it have to, you know, what does he have to do to be a franchise QB? I think Justin Fields is kind of an interesting conversation here, because I don't think Justin Fields has had tremendous productivity in the NFL. I think it's been pretty poor, to be completely honest and blunt about it. I think people look at Justin Fields as somebody who is a franchise quarterback in the league.
But,
and like, for how I described it, Blankers, of like, I don't know if I have belief that Justin Fields can lead the Bears to the Super Bowl. Maybe Joe's a better person to answer this because he's a Bears fan. Mm-hmm. Like, is he there to you, Joe? Do you think Justin Fields can lead the Bears to a Super Bowl? Do you consider Fields as a franchise quarterback in the NFL?
Not yet. He's your franchise quarterback right now. I mean, these guys, I think you really become a franchise quarterback when you get the second contract. Like, Kyler Murray, they've invested in him into such a way where he is their franchise quarterback because the contract pays him a ton of money. You can't move on from him, really. Like, what happens if the Cardinals get the number one pick next year? They're going to try to move on from Kyler? That's complicated. If the Bears get the number one pick next year, they take Caleb Williams. That's easy. So it's like, I think that's kind of the line, is it's really, once you get that second contract, that's when you're really a franchise guy. But when you're taken in the first round, you're the franchise guy at the moment.
See, and I have friends that are Bears fans, and we have this debate all the time. I believe he has the talent to be a franchise quarterback, but he has to show you more and more consistently from a passing perspective what he's capable of doing and executing it to do those things.
Oh, yeah, he's not there yet.
And I totally agree with you. There's no reason to believe that as much as they may have considered moving on from him this last year with Bryce Young, if a more can't-miss prospect is there next year and they're drafting number one and it's Caleb Williams, if he doesn't take strides this year, it's real easy to just pass the buck on and go, yeah, we're changing our mind, we're going this way instead.
I think if Caleb was in this last draft, the Bears would have never traded the pick and they would have taken Caleb. I don't know how you move on from a guy like who's shown flashes of greatness for a guy who looks like he's a toddler on the football field right now without pads on.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's what I was going to say. If there were less question marks, if there was more of a can't-miss guy like Caleb Williams as opposed to a smaller Bryce Young with question marks that people don't – obviously, you can't get better. You can't go and practice hard and get taller and stronger, that I think the Bears might have absolutely done that.
713-780-ESPN. What is your definition of a franchise quarterback? What does C.J. Stroud have to do in order for him to be that franchise quarterback? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Well, I already have some franchise liquors for you. Gin O' Ben. I like a good drink at the end of the day. You know about that. They have a franchise vodka, gin, and bourbon for you. All part of the rotation for me. Gin O' Ben Spirits does it better than anybody in the business. They use their state-of-the-art innovative Prosecco craft technology that makes them better in purity, aroma, and taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gin O' Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in Gin O' Ben. Try a sip of it. Compare it to your brand. You're going to taste a huge difference. I've been on Gin O' Ben for a couple of years now. Ever since that first sip, I've never gone back. Gin O' Ben's the only thing I will drink. It is so smooth. It is so clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink without that bite. Don't work through your drink. You can find the Gin O' Ben Vodka, Gin, and Bourbon at Total Wine. You can find it at Specs, many of the other local liquor stores. Ask about it whenever you're going out to dinner at your restaurants. Pick up your bottle on the way home today. Also, head over over to the GentleBend.com website, learn a little bit more about GentleBend. Plus, they're giving away Astro tickets. So you head over to GentleBend.com, find them on social, register in their sweepstakes to win some Astros tickets coming up this summer. Speaking of the Astros, whenever you're headed to Minute Maid Park, stop by the GentleBend Bar, just to the left of the Crawford boxes, right when you walk in the Union Station entrance. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, GentleBend.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
9042, for goodness sakes, Branham, if we drafted Levis and he'd given the same response as Stroud, you'd be slobbing over each word. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't heard Will Levis in a Texans uniform. I'm in a lose-lose when it comes to Levis and the Titans, though. Like, I don't want the Titans to be good. I don't want Will Levis to be good for the Titans. But I also don't want to be wrong. So it's kind of a weird spot that I'm in. I'm in a lose-lose. If Levis is good, it means the Titans are good. If Levis is bad, it means I'm wrong. I think that's what I'm rooting for, honestly. I think I'd rather be wrong on Levis than Levis be good and the Titans have a franchise quarterback.
That makes sense. I mean, you retired your draft hat. At least for now.
No. My scouting quarterback strap.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, I get it right.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, you've got so many hats you wear these days, and some have tape on them and some don't. But I think it's the best approach to it. I mean, I don't think – look, I'm curious, too, because you watched, like you said, and I have no reason to doubt you ever, but, I mean, unless we're having a debate, but you watched a lot of tape on Will Levis. And I've heard a lot of different opinions, but now it's kind of like waiting for the trade to unfold that we just had the Texans go through. Now it's just all is done except for just watching the kid play to see who's right, who's wrong, and what he turns out to be. And I think that if he's a quarterback in the division, as much as you saw what you saw, I want him to fail miserably. I'd love to see that you were right, and even though I'd have to hear about it, I believe that. You have an innate ability to be able to break down tape and have an opinion on players.
I think the fit's bad, though. Like, I don't think it's a good fit. Like, if I had to think of, like, what Levis is going to be in that system, I think he's going to be like Tannehill. Like, I don't think he's going to be somebody that we, like, that we just look at and be like, ooh.
Is that because your running back isn't in his prime, or is because they're a very run-heavy offense?
Run-heavy offense.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think that he's going to shine, per se.
Because I think it would be great if he came in and Derrick Henry was basically more in his prime, where he knew he had that safety valve every time he just turned around it and put it in the breadbasket, that, you know, he could get a guy that could get you 5 or 6 yards and get you going in the right direction. Whereas now it just seems like everything is so kind of leaning towards a rebuild, and they're not the same kind of players around him either. And I don't know what kind of structure, if they're going to change the offense, but you're probably right in the fact that, you know, again, like I said, when you get a new quarterback and if he's going to be your guy, you got to start building the offense around his skills.
What does Stroud have to show you to earn the title of franchise QB? Degenerate gambler, 22 touchdowns in his first 6 games, like Watson, first steps to being a franchise quarterback. That's lofty.
But that's interesting, because I was going to bring that up to you before we went to the break. Like, I'm thinking back on Deshaun's first year, and I know that it wasn't about wins and losses because he only won like 4 games. But I know he got hurt too. But I'm saying, but what people kind of hung their hat on and really got excited about was the excitement factor. Being able to extend plays, do things with his legs, make something out of nothing, you know, make some sports center type plays as well, to where people had a wow factor when they watched it and said, man, that guy's good. And then people were, you know, really wanted to jump on board with the Texans and Deshaun and see more. And they were clamoring to see, you know, what he could be. I don't think C.J. Stroud's the same type of quarterback as Deshaun Watson, because he doesn't want to run like that, and probably wisely so, but I think he's capable of running when he needs to. I think it's more the wow factor, or the ability to kind of make something out of nothing, to make smart decisions, and to put this team in a position to win and score points.
See, I don't think Stroud's going to be like a wow factor guy. Like, I think Stroud's going to have to like beat you from the pocket, like make accurate throws, get rid of the football on time, put it where it needs to be. Like, I don't think he's going to be like Watson. Like, I don't want him to be Watson. Like,
no.
I think Watson's a little bit overrated.
But isn't that
Watson had tons of negative plays?
But can't the wow factor be
to have negative plays?
But can't the wow factor be that he makes a couple of throws in the pocket where you're like, whoa? I mean,
yeah, sure.
I mean, you know, maybe puts it in a small window or throws a great deep ball or you know, makes the appropriate read at the appropriate time with a blitz coming or something and makes things happen to where you go, ooh, okay, he's getting it.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I was thinking more of like the dual threat type of guy. Like, I don't want him to be a runner. I don't.
No. Did what he had to do to kind of prove some things to some people and make the point, and also in the game that he was in the semifinal. But I don't think that's who he is, and nor, like, to your point, who he should be on a consistent basis. But he did make the point, look, if I got to run, I can run. What it really showed me was leadership, toughness, and his ability to, you know, in a game that they were underdogs, to really give his team a chance to win, and they dominated most of that game.
Yeah, like, give me two or three first downs a game with your feet. Like, that's all I need. Ocho, I'm a big fan of trial by fire, so start CJ from day one and let's ride. I'm pretty much there. Like, I want Stroud to be the day one starter, no doubt about it. The one caveat that I would have here is if you don't feel like Stroud is ready, like if you feel like Stroud hasn't picked up the playbook, if you feel like CJ Stroud playing and starting that first week is going to be a detriment more than a positive, that's where you can't play him in week one. Like, he has to be ready to go. And I firmly believe he will be ready to go.
Yeah, no, I think he will be too. But I think that it's in the best interest of the franchise and CJ Stroud and everybody involved, including Nick Caserio, that you put him out there from day one. I don't think anybody, with the exception of a lot of blue Kool-Aid drinkers, are expecting playoffs or, you know, or a playoff-type season right away. So I think that you get him out there to take his lumps and to understand, make the mistakes now instead of later, understand where the game is and the speed of the game and, you know, how the athleticism changes for the game. And then from his perspective, understand, hey, this is what it takes to win, how I read defenses, you know, my pre-snap reads, my you know, all the different things that a quarterback in this league has to do and show throughout the season progress. And if he's doing those things, then he's doing the right by him, right by the franchise, and he's keeping this thing progressing on the right track.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 3219 says, is Kirk Cousins a franchise QB? Dak need to be more than just be a top 10 quarterback. See, I have Kirk probably just outside of my top 10 QBs. Dak is probably right on the cusp in that same window. I would go as far to say, I don't think Kirk is a franchise quarterback. I think Kirk is like a decent, you know, stopgap. I think he's going to put up numbers in the right offense. He has a lot of talent around him. I don't think Kirk Cousins is bad. I think Kirk Cousins is a good football player that's overpaid. I wouldn't quite call him a franchise quarterback. Dak, I'm a little torn on. There was times whenever I thought Dak was a franchise quarterback, but coming off this last season, I would have to demote him and not think that Dak is a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, look, I think Dak is a franchise quarterback by salary alone, and we've talked about this in the past. Some guys, it's just all about timing. I mean, Matt Stafford at one point was the highest paid player in the whole league, and he was a franchise quarterback. See, he was quarterback of the Lions every single week, making a boat ton of money, regardless of how good he was compared to the rest of the league, but he's a franchise quarterback. I think Dak, similarly, he plays for one of the most noticed, marketed, and visible teams in all of professional sports across the world, and he's making a boat ton of money. And the only thing that you can say is, so that's two-thirds of the way there, but the other thing is you have to do it on the field, and that's where between injury and just lack of coming up and stepping up in big games, it's very easy to pick that apart and say he ain't there yet in terms of being where he needs to be.
But if he's not there yet, like, I don't think he's ever going to get there. Like, I don't see much room for growth in Dak's game. He's 29 years old.
Well, I'll say this, and the injury didn't help, and you're right, and age is also factored in, but if you give him the kind of weapons that they're trying to give him again that he had previously, and again, he doesn't take another step, he isn't able to get them more, then you're right. Then this might be the last year and the last chance for him to be able to prove, with Brandon Cooks added to C.D. Lamb and some of the guys they already have, of, hey, I have every weapon on the planet that I need. I have a good offensive line. There's people thinking in the NFC we should be Super Bowl NFC Championship caliber team. If he fails again, then I think it's easy to say it's passed him by. I mean, good on him for cashing in as many dollars as he could possibly make, but in terms of getting the overall rating of being a franchise quarterback, that, you know, I think it's one thing, but being like a top 10 quarterback in this league capable of winning big games, if he doesn't do it this year, yeah, I think it's safe to say he may never do it.
See, I'm not bullish on the Cowboys' offense either. Like, Dak led the league in interceptions last year, and he missed five games. And I think that they downgraded with their offensive play caller. Like, I think it's not a good thing that Mike McCarthy is taking over as their OC.
I can agree.
And the former Boise State quarterback left to go to L.A. Like, I don't think that that offense is going to take off. I think it was a misstep letting him go and handing over the play calling to McCarthy. I think that's going to hurt Dak Prescott.
Yeah, no, I think, look, I saw Mike McCarthy struggle and fight on every single play with Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers get frustrated and pissed off with McCarthy for play calls and a ton of different decisions that he made offensively. So it's going to be real curious on a lot of different fronts because the NFC is wide open, and it's basically the Eagles and everybody else. So that should give – you're in the division, you're going to see him twice, and that's going to be a good barometer. But between them and the Niners – you know, I would say those are the two front runners in the NFC. But a lot of people's sleeper pick and a lot of people's sexy pick is the Cowboys. And so the table is set for them. They just have to show a way to perform. And I think it's going to end up being on Dak's shoulders. Play calling is one thing. But if he just executes the offense as an established veteran quarterback, even if McCarthy calls a bad play, he should be able to either audible out or go through his progressions to get the ball where it needs to go. And a lot of times he struggles with that, especially in big moments.
Dre, who's our resident Cowboy fan, one of many residents, he can't read defenses. He constantly makes the wrong reads, makes terrible decisions with passing. I know Cowboy fans don't really love Dak.
No.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Maybe one of Stroud's favorite targets. They have the 713 connection. Tank Dell, go Cougs. What weight would make you feel comfortable with Tank Dell and what some of the veterans are saying about the new Houston Texan wide receiver? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.